We came in right on schedule, and Prince Charlie and everyone was there, and all the bands and Rudy Da. Well, anyway, we landed right on schedule, sat down there and anchored and waited and waited. Well, this next guy comes in, and a PBY is a very, very critical airplane to fly. It's got a super critical landing speed, which is 73 knots. For each knot faster, the CG moves 1 foot forward. And so, the British manual, which they have always made the best manuals, it was on the PBY, said, if they said your proper landing speed is below 75 knots, and said, and if you land at 80 knots or above, they said, you will cave in your nose wheel door, but in any event, you will water loop with catastrophic results. Well, hell, here he comes in. Didn't buzz the field or the water or anything, just came in too fast. He is running out of water, pushes forward, and any seaplane pilot, whether it's a Super Cub or big airplane like this, you don't push forward on the water. Well, he did. Well, it's just like the manual said, you will water loop. He sat down about 80, pushed the nose forward, and he water looped with catastrophic results. Well, so here I was, the shot my mouth off in front of the world and whatever, and then we was in a British pub, naturally, and I was having a good pint of British beer, and the London Daily Mail called. And here this British, he says, Flight Commander Edwards, he said, what is your dissertation of what happened to the other aircraft? And I just made the comment, I said, well, it's pretty simple. I said, the pilot didn't inventory his thumbs before he landed. Well, would you believe the next day in the London Daily Mail, that was on the headlines, that Flight Commander Edwards said the pilot had not inventoried his thumbs. Well, they didn't catch this. He didn't, but the rest of the Brits did. And they sold out immediately, and they had to make a reprinting of the London Daily Mail. So, and we came back, and we had I had all professionals on board, and we had an uneventful flight.
Connie, what is your first recollection of being aware of airplanes as a kid? What got you hooked?
Oh, Lord, I was born in the golden age of aviation. I was born in 34, and that's within an 18 months of when all the early great planes flew. The ME-109 flew a few months after I was born. The Spitfire, the Hurricane, the DC-3. I mean, it just goes on and on. That, in a period of 18 months or 2 years, that's where all the greats came out. And as a little kid, naturally, I was, I was 7 years old when Pearl Harbor was born. I bombed, and I was always interested in airplanes. And my father, he didn't like airplanes, but my father was born in 1868, and he was 66 when I was born. Mm-hmm. So he was 40 years old before he saw his first car. So so he was not an aviation enthusiast, but when he passed away in 49, first thing I did is went and got me a Super Cub and started flying it, and ended up with when I was 16, I ended up with an old UC-78, an old bamboo bomber, a twin Cessna.
So did you get your license at 15, 16?
Well, at 16, but I was flying at 15. and so then I got an old PT-22, an old Ryan PT-22, and naturally, I was the best pilot in the world, and when I got about 18, it amazed me how much talent I'd lost. And so then I ended up in Central America for a long time. And
so tell us about that, about flying in Central America. It sounds intriguing, to say the least. What, at that age, what were you doing flying down there?
Well, I ferried a Piper Tri-Pacer to Ancon in the Canal Zone. I already had they didn't give ratings back then. They gave a letter of competence. So I had my letter on DC-3s and this and that. So I ended up let me say it's the worst airplane in the world, the Piper Tri-Pacer. I don't want to insult the Piper Tri-Pacer owners, but you really need to get an airplane. Anyway, so I ended up flying an old ragged C-47 for the owner of the flight service there, and I flew back and forth all over Central America. I was 18, and I was coming back home, and I took a plane into El Salvador. Into Costa Rica, and I was sitting there, and here was this Ted Smith, that was a forerunner of the Aero Commander, landed, and I don't know, the pilot had appendicitis or something, and so they desperately need to get it up to El Salvador, and they asked the manager there, says, is there anybody there qualified to fly this thing? Well, man, that was a rocket ship, you know, for a 18-year-old. And so he said, well, we don't have anybody. But he said, there's this slick-faced kid that's been flying everything in the world in and out of here for the past 2 or 3 months. He says, if anyone can fly it, he can. Well, hell, they offered me $500 to take you to El Salvador. Man, I would have given them $500 if I had it, you know, to fly the thing. Went to El Salvador. I gave a couple of three demonstration flights. Well, you know, the Latinos, if you don't have a sword scar on your cheek and high riding boots, you know, and gray beard, you're not a pilot, you know. Well, so anyway, ended up selling it. They sold it to the Honduras Mahogany Company. So I ended up in Tegucigalpa, the second most dangerous airport in the world. And
what's first?
It's Neapol. It's the most dangerous in the world, and Tegucigalpa is the second. You come over a cliff, you dive at the runway, and off the end of the runway, there's a 150-foot straight drop. And it's something else. But, you know, at that age, you're gutless anyway. So I went to work for the Honduras Mahogany Company, and I ended up flying a C-46. And it just went on and on. My career is...
What took you over to Cuba?
Well, that's a long story, but I ended up as escort pilot for Tacho Somoza, the president of Nicaragua, and he was very good friends with Batista, and he had a Howard 500, and we had three P-38s, so I was flying a P-38 by then, and so we used to fly in and out of there. That was fun, I'll tell you. Havana, in a fancy uniform with a Bernardelli machine gun pistol on your hip. it was great. And I'd be living in Cuba for the past 64 years if it hadn't been for Castro.